I hope either way everybody had a really wonderful Yontif. It's really a special feeling, I think, to be able to resume our learning about Elisha, even as, you know, for all of us, these days and weeks and months, each one, so momentous. Of course, today being Yom HaShoah, which is, always, of course, deeply meaningful. But, now that it appears that, active fighting has resumed in Gaza, and the Jewish army is, engaged in this struggle, really, for, national survival, even as we, experience like the wrath of the world, for insisting on survival, having that audacity. The learning always feels a little bit more momentous, and we hopefully direct that to the right places. It should be a zchus for all of our chayalim and for all of the hostages. I remember speaking maybe the first week following October 7th about how, at least at the time, it wasn't clear to me how we could both destroy the evil that had risen up against us, and at the same time bring all of our brothers and sisters back home. And it's still not clear to me how you can accomplish both of those things at once. But as I said then, I'll just repeat now, where human solutions might fall short, there are yet divine solutions, and we hope for those very, very much. There's a beautiful interpretation, and with this we'll just begin. But beautiful interpretation of the pasuk in Tehillim, Tov lehodos laHashem lezamer l'shimcha elyon lahagid baboker chastecha v'emunascha balelos. V'emunascha balelos literally means that faith in the nights, but it seems very appropriate in times of when it doesn't seem clear to us exactly how something is going to work out, how there could be a path forward, how there could even be a possible path forward. So those are exactly the lelos for which emunah is so necessary. So right now we have faith, and even if that's all we have in terms of the ability to hope for great victories on the field of battle and great yeshuos for our hostages, and well, that will have to suffice. So tonight, just to pick up, I subtitled the shir, the legend of Elisha, which is really about literally a legend that became kind of itself a source of miraculous salvation. So at the beginning, where we left off of the eighth chapter, the Navi tells us the following: Elisha diber al ha'isha asher hechayes b'na lemor, kumi l'chi at uveseich v'guri b'asher taguri, ki kara adonai l'ra'a v'gam ba el ha'aretz sheva shanim. So Elisha speaks to the woman, the Shunamis. We all recall, he found a woman who was well past the childbearing age, and promised her a child, and it was a double miracle, because first she, had a child, and then the child died, and Elisha was able to be Mechaye Es HaMesim. And here, Elisha calls over to her and says, there's going to be a famine for 7 years. Ki kara Hashem la-ra'av. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that Hashem is the one who has to assign a famine. It doesn't come from any other source, but it's going to be for 7 years. This matches, of course, the most intensive biblical famine of which we know, right? In Sefer Bereishis, the days of Yosef and Paro and the famine that brought the Jewish people to Egypt. So, here again, he tells this woman that basically she's going to have to, leave Israel. So, Vatakom ha'isha v'tas kedvar ish o Elohim. So the Shunamis, ever faithful, Vatela chi uveisa Vatagor Beretz Plishtim Sheva Shanim. So she goes and she lives in the land of Plishtim for the 7 years of the famine. Now, just to give a little bit of a perspective, what this famine was, and again, you know, this is a difficult Gemara, but it's important for us to encounter this Gemara. Amalei Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, you have it here in the second source. Ma dechsev ki kara Hashem l'rav v'gamboi l'aret sheva shanim. So v'hanach sheva shanim mayachal. What did they eat for 7 years? 7 years, you know. You think about how Yosef prepared Mitzrayim for a famine of 7 years, and it was all necessary, right? It wasn't like there was, you know, room to spare. So Amalei Hachiyam Rav Yochanan shen rishona achlu ma'ashe b'batem. They ate what they had. Shnia achlu ma'ashe b'sados. You know, they foraged in the fields. So shlishis basar behema tahora. They slaughtered their kosher animals. Revius basar behema tmeya. They had no choice. It was pikuach nefesh. It was sakanas nefashos. They ate non-kosher animals. Chamishis basar shkatzim b'remasim. The fifth year, they ate, you know, basically bugs and other things. Shishis basar b'neihem uvnoseihem. Shviis basar zroosehem. You know, not just cannibalism, but, you know, the kayim ashenem are ish basar zroo yochelu. So we're talking about a kind of, you know, a desperation that is painful to really contemplate. And yet, even in the face of this, you know, the woman, the Shunamis, who we, you know, have come to admire so much, she would not have left if it wasn't for the fact that Elisha told her she should leave. The Malbim was quick to note this. Atakom ha'isha v'atas k'dvar yishu Elohim. Be'atzma lo ha'isa yotzeis me'eres Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz. Bal te'anesh k'mo shenena shali melech. Befrat shegam hi ha'isa isha chashuva. Rak achar shehaya al pinavi asa sachein. So the Malbim says explicitly that despite the totally dire conditions, she would not have left if Elisha didn't tell her to leave. You know, such was her devotion to the land of Israel. And he references the story that we're going to build up to in a few weeks in terms of Rus. The Gemara Baba Basra, Daf Tzadi Aleph, tells us that even though there was a famine, Vayhi bimei shvod ha-shoftim, Vayhi ra'av ba'aretz, V'chein ha-yer Rabbi Shimon Yochai Omer, Ali melech machlan v'chulion gedolei hador hayu, Farnasei hador hayu, Mipnei ma nenshu, Mipnei shiyatsu, Me'aretz l'chutz l'aretz. That even though there was a measure of justification, in the end, you know, they were punished at the expense of their life for abandoning the land of Israel, even during a time when, you know, that was, you know, justified. The Rambam accepts this basically as a matter of halacha. If you take a look here in the fifth source, very dramatic statement. The Rambam then goes on to list a few exceptions, very limited, right, for the purposes of Torah study or to get married, or because there's like a momentary threat of akum. But then the Rambam says in all cases you have to return. Then the Rambam mentions, you know, this case of a dire famine. And then, you know, he records, V'afal pi shemotru latzeis, ein amidas chasidish, shere machon v'chulion shnei gdolei ador hayu, u'mipnei tzara gedolei yatzu v'nischaivu kalaya lamakom. They were guilty in this sense of a capital offense. So here, I think it's, you know, worthwhile just to pause for a moment, and then we'll, of course, get back to the thread of the story with the Shunamis and Elisha. But it's a remarkable thing, you know, when you stop to think about the devotion of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, and the kind of commitment that we're talking about here, the willingness to literally endure, you know, these kinds of conditions. And Elisha had to give explicit gzeiras hanavi to tell her that she's, you know, she's supposed to leave, otherwise, you know, ride out the storm. I was thinking a lot about this in preparation, and especially in light of some of the things that we're all, you know, contemplating right now. you know, we can just we can sense it coming, right? You know, sort of whether Israel kills zero civilians or, you know, or whatever they claim, you know, the millions that Hamas, you know, propaganda states and, you know, the world accepts as if it's like, you know, gravity. A matter of fact, it doesn't matter. Whatever we do. And yet endure the onslaught of anti-Semitism that, you know, this kind of thing unleashes. But, you know, the Jewish people, you know, are committed to our survival and committed to the land of Israel. And it's a special thing to think about that, you know, in this moment. Of course, it requires, you know, a certain kind of a sacrifice from those on the front lines. But it also requires a sacrifice from all of us, from all Jews in the world, because, you know, on some level, there's an instinct that people have just to want to, you know, not have to deal with it, to say, you know, oh, you know, better not to do this. Let's just, you know, keep our heads down. But this is a devotion to the land of Israel that I think is befitting of the kind of devotion that we're called to, and that the Shunamis would have, you know, demonstrated. But Elisha said to her, she was supposed to during these 7 years leave with her son from the land of Israel. So in this, you know, specific context, and the context is very significant, so to return to the text, Vayhi miktzei shava shanim, exactly at the end of the famine, literally at that moment, Vatashu vayisha meretz plishtim, so she came back from the land of Plishtim, Vateitze litzokel ha-melech el beisa, Ve'el Sadeh. So this woman came back as soon as the famine was over. In other words, like, she had this heter to leave the land of Israel that Elisha gave her. And then, you know, she immediately comes back. But she comes back to find that her house and her fields have been taken by, you know, basically squatters, you know, people who took advantage of the opportunity. So V'hamelech, and at this exact moment, when she comes in, the king was talking to, of all people, Gehazi, and, you know, he wants to hear from somebody, you know, who had at one point a front row seat, you know, the greatness of Elisha. So this is the scene. You know, literally, the king has asked Gehazi to tell him the legend of Elisha. And at that exact moment, the woman walks in, who probably is the best walking evidence of Elisha's greatness. So as this king is asking to hear of the legend of Elisha, it's literally a legend in the making. Because at that exact moment, God, you know, providence would have it, that a woman, you know, who was given a child by Elisha and whose child was saved by Elisha and then had her life saved by Elisha in the context of this famine, walks into the room, you know, and she's like, she's the walking evidence, you know, of who Elisha was and everything that he achieved. Now, in terms of this expression, HaGedolo Sasharas Elisha, there is an important, idea that emerges from the Gemara and Megillah. So I'm just going to share this Gemara and then circle back. So Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there's a dispute in the Gemara about which has the superior Kedusha, Beis HaKnesses or Beis HaMedrash. It's sort of like a proxy battle for, you know, Tefillah and Talmud Torah, two critical mitzvos. So the Gemara and Megillah tells us, Beis HaKnesses, Mutter La'asos Beis HaMedrash, Ma'amina Darish Bar Kapara, Ma'idich Seva, Yisrof, Is Beis Hashem, Beis Beis HaMelech, Beis Kol Batei Yerushalayim, Beis Kol Beis Bayis Gadol, Saraf Bayish, Beis HaShem is the Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaMelech are the Paltarin Shal Melech, kind of the, you know, palace and its environs, Es Kol Batei Yerushalayim, Kimashman, the residential quarters of Yerushalayim, Beis Kol Beis Gadol, Saraf Bayish, so Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yishuv, and Levi, it's a Machlokas, Charamar, Makom Shemigadlin Bo Torah, V'chad amar makom shebegadlim bo tefila. Saman damer Torah d'chsev, Hashem chafeit saman tzidko, yagdil terav yadir. Saman damer tefila d'chsev, sipruna hagdolos asher asa Elisha, Elisha da'avad, berachamei hu da'avad. So the view that maintains that a bayis gadol is a place of tefila, it's a reference to our pasuk. In other words, hagdolos asher asa Elisha, that Elisha's greatness was measured in tefila. That the things that Elisha achieved, he always achieved, according to Chazal, through a koach hatfila. And that too, I thought, would be a particularly poignant message. I certainly can't claim to have the koach hatfila of Elisha, but there is a principle of tefilas harabim nishmas and tefilas hatzibur. This is a time for us, of course, to come together, in tefilos. And so, hagdolos asher asa Elisha, is a reference to Berachem Ehud Avad, that his modus operandi was through the power, the koach hatfila. So, Gehazi is called upon to bear witness to these things. So, Vayhi hu misaper la melech es asher hechayos hameis. So, at the exact moment that all this is going on, so he decided to go, for the greatest hits, volume one, which is, the Tchiyas HaMesim, that was, you're not going to beat that. V'nei ha'isha asher hechayas b'na'a, tzo'ekes el ha'melech al beisa ve'al sada, v'yom rege chazi adoni ha'melech zos ha'isha v'ze b'na'a asher hechaya Elisha. So we'll say, this will seem planned, but it's not, right? This is the woman, and this is her son that Elisha saved. This is an extraordinary moment, a legend that became, as they say, a legend in the making. So Vaishal HaMelech Elisha Vatisaperlo. So the king verifies this, and he doesn't need to hear anymore, he doesn't need to see anymore. Vayiten LaHamelech Sarisa Chad Lemor. Hashev es kol asher lav es kol tvuos hasadem yom azva saaretz ve'arata. So he says, okay. If I had to wonder how great Elisha was, I guess it was in his merit that she would walk in exactly at this moment when you're telling of her, and she verifies the story. So he sends one of his officers, one of his lieutenants, to go make sure that she gets her field back and she gets her house back. So again, the word of Elisha didn't cause her any harm, quite the opposite, that, not only was she saved the famine, but she was able to recover, her possessions. So again, the zchus of Elisha, this is kind of like compound interest, right? It wasn't just, it was a remarkable story to hear about this woman and, the child that Elisha had saved, but it actually came back to save her again. She got the compound interest that Elisha's zechuyos were continuing to redound for her, and she was able to recover her property. One comment about Gehazi, and then one, I think, very critical observation about the Ravanel, about the entire story. So if you look here carefully, Gehazi refers both to the king, but also to Elisha. But there's something very striking about the way that he does so. I'll just read it again. Hopefully somebody will just jump in. Vayomer Gehazi Adoni HaMelech, Zos HaIsha, Vizebina, Asher Hechaya Elisha. So in terms of addressing both the the Melech and Elisha, the king is referred to as Adoni HaMelech. Elisha is referred to by his first name. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that this was very, very, very significant problem. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is trying to define what's an apikores. And there are different opinions in the Gemara. Rav Nachman Amar Zehakore Rabo Bishmo. Damar Rabbi Yochan Mibneiman Nenash Gehazi Bnei Shakara the Rabo Bishmo. Shenemar Vayogir Gehazi Adoni Hamelech Zos Haisha Vezebina Asher Hechaya Alisha. But if I'm reading the Gemara correctly, it's not just that, you know, Gehazi referred to Elisha by his first name, but he did so immediately after referring to the Melech as Adoni HaMelech. In other words, it wasn't that Gehazi was like, you know, some, you know, like extreme libertarian or something, and he just like, you know, refused to, acknowledge, you know, reverence or sources of authority. The king got his, Adoni HaMelech, which is appropriate. Shetehei Maso Alecha. But Elisha was just Elisha. The Marasha, you know, comments that, you know, in a certain sense, this was worse than, you know, what God Gehazi his, you know, tzaras, after, you know, trying to shake down Naaman, you know, sort of living off of Elisha's, you know, miracles and, you know, trying to monetize, you know, Elisha's spirituality. This is, in a sense, worse because it, you know, reflects this flagrant, brazen lack of, you know, respect. And I think it's a very, you know, tragic, you know, kind of a thing that this is where, you know, it ends up. And especially in the context of where Gehazi is being, you know, called in and consulted as somebody, you know, who would know of the gedolos of Elisha. And even as he's recounting those gedolos, he's recounting the greatness of Elisha, it's sort of this paradoxical thing that he's recounting the greatness even as he's denying, you know, Elisha the respect that and the reverence that, you know, you would expect. And the contrast is so striking, of course, because Elisha himself didn't start out, you know, as Hagidolos Asher Asa Elisha. He started out as, you know, Elisha ben Shaphat Yatzak Mayim Al Yedei Eliyahu Gadol Shimusho Yoser Milimudo, that he was the paragon of, a pupil's reverence for a mentor, and Avi Avi Rechav Yisrael Ufarashav. And somehow, you know, like he missed this piece. And again, it is possible, you know, like I was talking to the kids in Shul on Shabbos about, we don't know exactly when he said it, you know. Rabbi Kiva said, "V'ahavta l'reicha kamoch," as a klal gadol b'Torah, but, you know, the first 24,000 students didn't sink in. Gehazi, you know, missed that big part of who Elisha was, you know, in terms of his relationship with Eliyahu. So the last element that I wanted to cover, which in some ways I think is the most critical tonight, is like a basic point that the Bravanel wants to try to make here. He says, you know, for sure the king knew much of Elisha's greatness. You would have to know of his greatness because both there were many public miracles and public miracles that the king was himself privy to, right? You know, the blinding of the soldiers of Aram and then the rediscovery of sight and many other such things. You know, and yet he wants to hear of the gedolos of Elisha. So the very question itself implies that he was to a certain extent aware. So what exactly is he looking for here? Like, what's he looking to walk away with? So the Ravenel, I think, has an insight that I think is really very poignant and incisive about how life life works and what we know and what we don't know. So the Ravenel writes, "Kvar Yishal Shoel, you know, V'Melech Yisrael Hayemaker Es Elisha V'Asa Lefanav Nisim Rabim." In Bevoel Al Moav K'Shetziva Asa Nachal Gavim Gavim, that, you know, amazing scene when the war was occurring and the river turned, you know, to the image of blood, and that saved him. And again, he had told him, you know, directly about how he'd be victorious over Aram. Susim Right, that great story when he was able to bring all the soldiers of Aram back, and he asked Elisha what he should do, and Elisha said you should amnesty them. So again, like, the king of Israel really had so much exposure to the gedolos of Elisha. The very last story of the, you know, miraculous victory that Aram, you know, flees, you know, overnight, and, you know, the rescued from famine. So, like, what does he have left to figure out? So, he was, you know, a living witness to Elisha's greatness. The Ravenel says the answer is self-evident. Sha'alo al inyan tzarasa. So he asked him how he became a mitzvah. V'siper lo ech nipaka bo tzaras namad b'dvar hanavi. He started telling him about, you know, the story of, the private story of Naaman. V'elze naflu advar minayim niflo shanavi haya osa. So he was triggered, so to speak, by, you know, this, you know, one observation of the tzaras. But it led to this whole broader conversation. So and it became clear to the king that he didn't know many things that Elisha had done. As much as he was aware of Elisha's greatness, in battle, so the king actually never heard about this. The Tchiyas HaMesim and the elderly woman, Elios Tchiyas HaMes Davar Gadol Amar Gedolos. Uvayim Kein HaSipor Hazeh Bazeh HaMakom Lioso Me'inin HaNisim Shas Elisha V'Shahayu Malchay Eretz Mizbala Mehev Aya Davar Noda V'Galoi V'Nis Ames Lifnei HaMelech V'Zeh Hishlam HaKasav L'Saper HaNisim Shas Elisha. Story, this marks the end of the various miracles that, you know, Elisha performs. So I found this to be a really extraordinary passage in the Ravenel for the following reason. The things that we think we know, and to some extent we know, if you ask the king, tell me about the greatness of Elisha, he could have given chapter and verse, this victory over Moab and this victory over Aram, etc., etc. But in the end, he realized that for whatever he knew, there was far more that he didn't know. Of the gedolos of Elisha. And he was so, you know, eager to understand, you know, more. You know, sometimes we imagine that we know and we understand, because to a certain extent that's true. You know, we do know and we do understand a certain percentage. But especially when one is dealing with, you know, greatness, we have to be cognizant that much of what we see, and no matter how much we see, is in all likelihood but a fraction of the real magnitude. We see what we're exposed to, and that could be a great deal. The king of Shomron did really see a lot, but there was so much that he didn't know, and he came to appreciate that. And for us, I think we have to try to sort of channel that and have you know, an awareness that if we're privileged to be exposed to greatness, you know, if not prophetic greatness in our generation, then other forms of greatness. So you sometimes can begin to imagine that, you know, you've sort of seen it all, but then you have to remind yourself that you're seeing what you're exposed to. And if they're really a great person, they're not, you know, going around broadcasting, you know, the things that they're doing. Because, you know, the service is its own reward. And it would be unthinkable for somebody, you know, of that stature to engage in, you know, self-promotion or whatever it might be. So there's a certain, you know, humility that has to come with exposure to greatness that I think is a very important aspect of this. Gehazi lacked, you know, that reverence. That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you know, that he thought that he could, you know, call Elisha, you know, by his first name as if, you know, he had reached his, whatever level that he imagined, you know, that he reached. But the truth is that, you know, the entire narrative is meant to highlight the extent to which Elisha's greatness was so far beyond. And I think it's a paradigm, you know, for exposure to greatness. But the Kal Vachomer that I wanted to end on, and it's not even a Kal Vachomer, that's not, but it's because it's the Havdil. It's not a quantitative or even a qualitative difference. It's just, you know, a completely different category. So that's especially important for us to bear in mind, you know, considering, you know, divine capacity. I said at the beginning, and I'll end on this, you know, on this note, since October, I've been, you know, like I said, you know, really uncertain of how, from a human standpoint, it could work out that you could achieve the two essential things, you know, the Pidyon Shvuyim, which is so, so, so important, and each one is an Olam Malay, and, you know, destroying an evil that, you know, seeks, you know, our destruction. Just in case we forgot it, you know, just yesterday, some of us here in this, you know, Zoom, were in Kerem Shalom not that long ago, and God willing, we'll have the opportunity to be together, you know, with a delegation that should be coming around the Lag BaOmer Bezrat Hashem. You know, and in Kerem Shalom yesterday, these people who haven't been home really since October 7th, you know, we're actually back and trying to get things together for their children. And there was a direct rocket attack. And as people here know, four soldiers were killed on the spot. And, you know, many more were injured. And I, you know, talking today, yesterday and today, to various people, you know, who have come to be very dear personally. And, you know, that you go back and, you know, you think that, you know, God willing, you start to get back on your feet. And then you're literally being rocketed, you know, and not like, you know, being rocketed and it misses it. No, it's killing people. This, you know, it's as many people unfortunately died yesterday in Kerem Shalom as died on October 7th, literally, you know, different circumstances, but the same basic evil. And, you know, how do we achieve both of these extremely necessary things at once? Well, I don't have an answer. I don't think any human has an answer, to be honest. But if it's true of an Elisha that you can't, you know, the greatness is beyond, you know, you think you know and you don't. So Kal Vachomer, Ben Binoshel Kal Vachomer, you know, that has to be kind of the humility that we have to do our part, and we have to hope that if we do the right thing and, you know, we have the courage that's needed for this moment. And like I said, it's courage from all of us. It's not just the people who are in Gaza. That might be the most overt and obvious, you know, kind of courage. But all Jews in the world are going to need a lot of courage right now because, you know, my wife was sending me today, today was a day of rage declared in New York City. I don't know what exactly that amounted to, but, you know, a day of rage over this, you know, and it's never ending, you know, and each day that goes on, you know, will be another day of rage, you know, over this. There's no rage over, you know, the Hamas rocket attack yesterday. There's no rage over October 7th. That's just resistance. But, you know, so we all need courage. And if we have the courage, we hope then Hashem will, you know, do things that, you know, just are inscrutable to us, and God willing, somehow bring us victory over kind of evil that simply can't be abided, can't be, you know, allowed to, you know, those children need to go back to Kerem Shalom. They can't go back, you know, with these monsters, you know, we're just rocketing them. To bring our chatufim home. So with Hashem's help, in ways that we can't, you know, we from where we sit, it's just not apparent how both of these things can happen. But God willing, we'll merit seeing the gedolos, not in this case Asher Asa Elisha, but Es Hayad HaGdola, Asher Asa Hashem, Al Gevul Mitzrayim, shall we say, you know, Vayaminu BaHashem, it will, God willing, lead us to, you know, re-experience some of those Yeshuos that, our ancestors were privileged to see. So with that, we'll hold it up and we'll continue, God willing, from here next week. And by that time, you know, may we, I should just note point.